Hello and welcome to this edition of Invest Africa Insights, where we speak to experts to get you the facts behind Africa's headlines. Today, I'm joined by Jacques Nel, Head of Macroeconomics for Sub-Saharan Africa at NKC African Economics. And he's here to talk about his latest report, which looks into Africa's prospects for recovery after coronavirus. Jacques, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So Jacques, it's clear that the global economic impact of coronavirus is going to be massive, but there's still a lot of uncertainty in Africa in particular, as well as a lot of variation across the continent in terms of the spread of the disease, the health measures taken, whether there's been a lockdown, how stringent that's been, as well as the underlying resilience of the economy. So the NKC Economics team and yourself have put together a healthcare corona lockdown index to map which African countries show the best prospects for recovery after the crisis. So I'm hoping that you'll be able to unpack some of this uncertainty for us today. So to start us off, can you shed some light on the coronavirus situation in Africa at the moment? Where are the numbers and where are the hotspots?
Sure. As you said, there's still a lot of uncertainty. So the active cases that we currently know of are trending around 244,000 for the continent as a whole, and they're increasing pretty rapidly. Over the past week, we've seen an average daily increase of around 14,000, and this translates to about a doubling of cases or active cases every 20 days. So it's still a big problem. It doesn't reach the proportions that we've seen in some developed worlds or some parts of the developed world, but it is definitely increasingly becoming a problem. So far, South Africa and Egypt have been by far the largest hit. South Africa currently accounts for around 43% of all active cases on the continent, and Egypt accounts for around 21%. Nigeria, the continent's most populous country, only accounts for around 7%. And just looking at the rate of increase, South Africa has got the most cases, but it's also guilty of the biggest increases. The first case was in South Africa, I think, if either Egypt or South Africa, but cases are still increasing really rapidly in South Africa. Other parts of the continent, like Kenya and some West African countries like Nigeria, Ghana, and Cote d'Ivoire, have also seen pretty strong increases in recent weeks, and which is perhaps concerning because these countries are starting to loosen up their restrictions. So cases have started growing much quicker there, and despite this, they've already started loosening restrictions. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. And just on the reliability of data, there's two issues here. There's concerns over reporting and then concerns over testing. With regard to reporting, on one extreme, you've got a country like Tanzania, where in April they stopped publishing data related to COVID-19. So officially, they still only have 305 active cases, which is most definitely not the case. And that's just another layer of uncertainty because we don't actually know what's going on there at the moment. I think from a continental perspective, the biggest concern is testing. And this is, just to put this into context, South Africa has been hardest hit by far, but it's also been by far the biggest tester on the continent, with South Africa testing around 32 people for every 1,000, while Kenya tests just under 4 people for every 1,000. And Nigeria, again, the most populous country, is testing not even 1 person per 1,000. So there's a lot of uncertainty as to the actual extent of the spread in a lot of these countries. And, the virus did hit the continent a lot later than Europe or the US. And the governments did have some time to implement lockdowns pretty early. So it is possible that the virus hasn't spread that much. But just this lack of testing remains a serious source of uncertainty, especially considering that a lot of these countries are now already starting to loosen their restrictions.
As you say, the data definitely is a massive challenge. And we've sort of been seeing people begin to cautiously say that, maybe coronavirus isn't taking hold in Africa quite the same way it has, say, in Europe, and that the sort of challenge we have now is sort of fundamentally an economic one, that the cure is
worsen the disease. But as you say, you know, you need to be very cautious because, as your report shows, you know, healthcare systems aren't prepared to cope with a massive takeoff, and we simply don't know what the cost of inaction is, and we don't really know how much the virus is taking hold. But moving back to the economy, your outlook doesn't make for comfortable reading. So I was wondering if you could just update us on what your sort of new forecast is for Africa. What are the sort of biggest economic challenges? Where are they coming from? Is it local lockdowns, travel disruption, global market instability, all of the above?
Yes, as is the case, you know, across the world, the past months have seen quite a few forecast revisions, but it does look like they are stabilizing now. But that being said, we still expect GDP to contract for the continent somewhere between 6 and 10%. This would, of course, be the worst performance in recent history, but there's still a lot of uncertainty just because of the amount of moving parts here. First of all, the variation in impact across countries. So there's still uncertainty on just a national level what's going to happen. And, you know, there's also going to be spillover effects between these countries. So to give a continental figure, you know, we're expecting something between 6 and 10%, which is very severe, very severe. Looking at per capita figures, we expect the continent's real per capita GDP to drop to pre-global financial crisis levels. So this is, of course, a decade-long setback, essentially. But then again, there's going to be a lot of variation in impact. This is going to be due to economic structures, the timing of the lockdowns, so not just when it was implemented, but how long these lockdowns will have to be in place. And of course, the current spread of the virus, just to what extent it has already become a problem. And, you know, the bigger the problem it is at the moment, the more likely that it could spread, of course. So that's, you know, that also doesn't bode well for the economy if it's already struggling. You know, as a general trend, the biggest hits are going to be on those economies that are really dependent on tourism and commodities, of course. But then other factors like the lockdown, the length of the lockdowns, the health of the economy coming into the virus or into 2020 is also going to play a critical role in not just the depth of the contraction, but also the pace of the recovery. And then from a governance perspective, it's going to matter to what extent the government is able to cushion the blow through monetary or fiscal policy. A lot of African countries don't have that sophisticated or developed monetary transmission mechanisms. So that kind of limits the impact that monetary stimulus is going to have. So a lot of these countries are then going to be a lot more reliant on fiscal policy than those in more developed countries. So just taking all that into consideration, we do see some countries posting positive growth this year, specifically Rwanda, Senegal, and Cote d'Ivoire. These countries have had pretty good growth momentum coming into 2020, and they've also been able to implement lockdown restrictions a lot sooner. So this means that, first of all, the virus didn't spread that much, and then secondly, that they've been able to loosen restrictions a lot quicker than some of the other countries across the continent. But then, in contrast, on the negative side, we've got countries like Botswana and Zambia and South Africa. Botswana and Zambia are a lot more commodity dependent. So we're going to see their big slump in not just government revenue, but just economic activity in general. These economies are a lot more dependent on their extractive sectors. And then a country like South Africa, where, you know, it came in with some really weak economic momentum into 2020. And the country is entering its third month of lockdown now. It's the most hit by the virus, and it still continues to spread pretty rapidly. So we do think South Africa is also going to have a really difficult economic year this year.
Yeah, and you sort of touched on my next question. I wanted to ask you there a bit, because obviously your the report you put together is also very much about sort of looking at recovery prospects and resilience. So I don't know if we could delve a bit sort of, yeah, more deeply into that aspect of things. What sort of what What key factors are you seeing or are you forecasting will lead to a quicker recovery? If you're sort of looking at the African continent, what are the signs one should be looking for quicker bounce back?
I think we would have to look at the countries that were proactive with their policy. So this means that they were able, like I mentioned, Rwanda or some of those West African countries that were proactive in implementing their lockdowns, which means that they will be able to loosen these restrictions. And then, of course, there's going to be the way they cushion the depth of the crisis is also going to, of course, have an impact on the speed of the recovery. So a lot of these countries didn't have much fiscal space to work with, but some of them did. And the sooner you implement these measures, the more impact they're going to have. They're going to cushion the slump, which, of course, you know, it's got a negative feedback loop. The weaker the economic performance, the reduced fiscal space, the less space to support the economy, and then the deeper the contraction. So a lot of these countries that were very proactive in their policy measures are going to recover a lot quicker. And yeah, we're looking at countries like Rwanda and to a lesser extent, Kenya and Ethiopia. For the latter two, that's also got to do with the strong momentum that they brought into 2020. Because if the economy is doing really good, it's a lot more resilient to something like a lockdown. You know, businesses were doing good last year. This year, you know, they're not going to do as good as they did last year, but they're going to survive at least. Where if, you know, economic conditions were really bad coming into a really bad year, then just a lot of businesses aren't going to survive. And that's going to have spillover effects into employment, government revenue, and just economic activity in general. In West Africa, Côte d'Ivoire also looks like it's going to be one of the stronger performers on the continent. Another thing that these countries have in common is all of them have pretty strong agricultural sectors, and economic activity in those countries are driven by, in a large part, by agricultural sectors. And this, you know, agriculture has been one of the few sectors that hasn't been directly hit by the virus, because in most countries it's considered an essential good. And of course, a lot of the production takes place in rural areas, or at least not in cities. So a lot of the restrictions haven't affected that industry that much. So a bigger reliance on agriculture is actually going to be a good thing this year. And then also, yeah, just the economic structure and the growth model is going to matter. A lot of these fast-growing East and West African countries have growth models that are centered around domestic consumption and infrastructure investment. So, you know, once the virus dissipates, all these factors are still in place. You know, growth is still driven by the expansion of services in these sectors. Governments are investing in infrastructure. They might have less fiscal space, but then there's the prospect of them, which we have already seen in recent years, you know, getting the private sector on board to invest in infrastructure. And these economies are thus consequently a lot more isolated from commodity prices and weaker growth globally. Tourism is still going to be important for a lot of these countries, so it depends how quick we see a pickup in tourism again. But in general, we expect those fast-growing West and East African countries to recover the quickest. And then at the other end of the spectrum, we see, again, the more commodity-dependent countries, especially the oil producers, have a difficult decade ahead of them. And this is mainly because of these economies are relatively undiversified. They lack a dynamic private sector. We've also seen some policy missteps in recent months, if not years, and also challenging business environments, which even at the best of times don't make them that attractive for foreign investment. And, you know, with foreign investors probably going to be a lot more specific about where they're going to invest now. These countries, you know, the prospects for these larger oil producers and more commodity-dependent economies doesn't look that bright.
Interesting. So commodities are in for a tricky patch, and diversification is a good way to build resilience. If we could just take a step back to your index and how you're mapping the situation across the continent, investment. You've mentioned fiscal space already, and alongside healthcare, those are the two factors you're mapping. Obviously, we were hearing a lot about debt before the crisis took hold, and there was a lot of concern around mounting debt levels in Africa. So what do you think can be done or needs to be done to relieve some of that debt stress and get the liquidity that will be needed to drive recovery back into these markets? Should we be looking to national governments for action, or should measures be taken regionally or even internationally? What are your thoughts?
Yes, as I mentioned, a lot of African countries don't have well-developed monetary transmission mechanisms. So a lot of the onus to cushion the blow has been on the fiscal side of things. And unfortunately, you know, public debt has increased rapidly, essentially across the continent. For some countries, this has been due to productive investment in infrastructure, some not. But regardless, you know, debt servicing costs have increased considerably. And a lot of these countries just don't have the fiscal space to sustainably increase spending. And by that, I mean, they could perhaps, you know, they, and given current financial conditions globally, they could find funding to stimulate the economy. But that's going to leave a much longer fiscal legacy. And then they're going to be forced to reduce spending over the medium term, which is, of course, going to have a negative impact on these countries' medium-term growth prospects. Now, how are we going to solve this problem? That's a very difficult question, you know. I think one of the good things, if you can say that, about the current crisis is that it is a global crisis. So investors are aware that, you know, a lot of these problems aren't really of their own doing. And there is a lot of capital going around. So I do think that does play in these countries' favor, just that the fact that investors will be looking at them and recognizing that, you know, this has been a severe exogenous shock. Everybody's been affected by it. Maybe there should be some leniency. So, you know, a solution will have to come from at the international level. We have seen a lot of talk and action from multilaterals now to delay or write off some debt repayments. But then again, we've seen also some of these governments, I think Ghana in particular, came out pretty strongly that the measures that have been announced so far are far from enough. You know, these countries are still going to struggle considerably if they, you know, given the weaker economic outlook and what that means for fiscal finances this year and over the medium term. They're going to need a lot more help. But I do think, you know, national debt management is still going to be very important, because if these governments can signal that, you know, we're getting our fiscal house in order, and by that I mean switching spending from recurrent spending to investment infrastructure and supportive, you know, economically supportive spending, that's going to be a positive signal to investors. That's going to allow them to access money more freely, and then, you know, it's going to just in general then help their fiscal positions going forward.
And regionally, do you think there's anything that sort of the African Union should be doing? Well, we've seen some sort of relatively successful initiatives around purchasing at a regional level. And obviously, there's a lot of questions being asked about the future of the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, given everything that's going on. So is there any space there, do you think, for, you know, sort of aspects of recovery to come out of the African Union and the African agreement and other free trade areas?
I do think something like the African Union creates a platform where a lot of governments can coordinate their response to the crisis. It's almost in a sense they've got a lot more bargaining power if they talk with one voice. And then they could, you know, yeah, that's they've just got a lot more bargaining power then. And just to coordinate your policy is also going to be a lot more effective than every country for itself. With regard to the Africa Free Trade Agreement, I think even last year, before we knew this crisis was going to hit, that was still going to be a long-term project, just because of the not just the tariff barriers, but specifically the non-tariff barriers to make tangible progress in that regard. So this is, of course, going to be a setback, but it's almost setting back something a year or two that was, in any case, going to take a decade or a decade and a half.
Interesting. So we've sort of covered debt and fiscal space and the economy. The other key thing you've been looking at is healthcare capability. So perhaps this would be a good moment to take a step back and just explain how you've gone about measuring resilience as a combination of healthcare capability and underlying economic factors.
Sure. In the index, we tried to measure both the extent to which the virus has spread and how well the respective healthcare systems can deal with an influx of patients. So for this, we looked at the quality of the healthcare system, the extent to which the coronavirus has spread up to date, and then also the sufficiency of lockdowns. And by that, I mean, we compared the period of mobility restrictions and their degree of stringency with the number of cases. So if a country has very few cases to date, then we assume the country doesn't have to have such a long lockdown period. And looking at these factors, we find that risks to the healthcare system are particularly high in countries in Central Africa and parts of West Africa. And this is specifically countries like the DRC, Cameroon, and then a lot of those smaller West African nations. And then on the more positive side, some of the best placed countries are those in North Africa and the island nations, as well as countries such as Botswana and Namibia. So apart from the humanitarian importance, of course, these countries will also have a lot less of an economic drag over the medium term related to the virus on their economies. Yeah.
And I was also wanting to ask you about South Africa in particular, because you pick it up as being a sort of a slightly anomalous case. You know, it's got a particular economic structure, pretty diversified, one of the richer economies in Africa, but it's also had obviously a significant proportion of the cases. So what's your and it's also where you're speaking to us from, so well placed. So what's your outlook for South Africa?
Yes, and unfortunately also not a very positive story. I think it was last week we found out that the South African economy contracted by 2% quarter on quarter annualized in the first quarter. So this is, of course, before any of the or at least any other major impact of COVID was incorporated into the figures. And this is also the third consecutive quarter of contraction. So the economy still in a technical recession. So it was in a technical recession before the crisis hit. Looking at some of the latest figures, business confidence fell to an all-time low in Q2. And consumer confidence fell to the lowest level since 1985. And also looking at the lockdown, now we've entered the fourth month of some form of lockdown. And, you know, with Africa's most formalized retail sector, the hard lockdown that we had and ongoing restrictions are going to have a severe impact on the economy. It's also concerning that in those Q1 GDP figures, we saw that consumer spending was essentially the only source of growth. And, you know, with the fourth month of lockdown, consumer confidence at almost four decade low, you know, that doesn't bode well for Q2 figures. And, you know, the lockdown is just going to have a lot of spillover effects into the second half of the year. We've already seen a lot of businesses and a lot of big businesses going bankrupt, a lot of retrenchments. And then also, from a sectoral perspective, we've also seen some data coming out from the mining and manufacturing sectors. Now, both these sectors were highly restricted under especially the first phases of a lockdown. And of course, manufacturing has got a lot of spillovers into the rest of the economy. You know, South Africa has got a very strong manufacturing base, especially in the African context. So that's going to, you know, weigh heavily on the economy as well. South Africa is also a big exporter, so we also not protected from weakness outside of the country. So, you know, exports if there's a drop in demand for South African goods, we're of course going to feel it because we're not consuming our goods ourselves, at least not enough to create any growth. So we are expecting a contraction of around 9.1% this year, which is incredible, actually. And yeah, that's again got to do with that economic weakness that we brought into this year. A lot of businesses were struggling last year already. If you can't operate your business for 3 months after struggling last year, then you're definitely going to go belly up. And I think that's what we have seen so far, and we're going to continue to see. And you know, that's unfortunate. And then on the fiscal side, that you know, South Africa does have very developed capital markets, and the government will be able to find funding to support the economy to a certain extent. But in recent weeks specifically, we've seen how dire the country's fiscal position really is, and that it's already a massive concern, and fiscal sustainability has become a real concern. So we are unlikely to see any massive further stimulus from the fiscal side. And, you know, having to deal with this magnitude of economic slump and the current fiscal situation doesn't look that good for at least the medium term. On a positive note, you know, we could see some policy reform, but we've been saying that for ever, basically.
Yeah, it's clearly an incredibly challenging landscape, and you know, we're in for quite a difficult few years. Touching on the small positives you had there at the end, my final question for you. You know, we've spoken about fiscal stimulus and how that could work. If you were advising investors in this climate, because obviously, you know, investment will have a key role to play, you know, to try to get things moving again. What would you say to investors looking at Africa now? Where do you see sort of relatively resilient opportunities? Which markets, which sectors would you be sort of advising people?
I guess my first piece of advice would now be, and essentially as always, there's a lot of variation across the continent. So, you know, you just have to do your homework, because different countries are going to, all countries are going to have risks. And it's important to know specific which risks are concerns in which countries. And there are going to be pockets of growth basically in every country. You just have to know which industry to look at. Just in general, as I mentioned before, we expect to see some positive growth and quicker recoveries in East Africa, some of those countries that had strong momentum coming into 2020 and that are with their growth models centered around domestic consumption, like Kenya, Rwanda, and in West Africa, countries like Cote d'Ivoire and Senegal. It's also going to be quite important to look or to see where tourism recovers quickly, not just because tourism plays an important role in a lot of economies, but that's also going to, you know, be a reflection of how that country has contained the virus and how things are going back to normal in that country, which is, of course, very important. And as you mentioned, investment is going to play a key role in the economic recovery across the continent. And given fiscal constraints, we should also keep an eye on some policy developments specifically related to privatization or government efforts to diversify, because you know this could be one of those kicks that the government needs just you know kind of make some progress in that regard. Because in coming years, you know, given the impact that the crisis is going to have this year on the fiscal position, countries are going to be very vulnerable to another crisis going forward, and then the government's going to be able to do even less. So, you know, it's really going to be important for these governments to promote the development of their domestic private sectors. And the best and fastest way to do that is to get foreign investment on board. So that's also going to be something to keep an eye on, just some policy developments. And then perhaps, you know, just a wild card. The African online retail market has been a really tough nut to crack. I think a lot of companies have burnt their fingers trying to crack that nut. But, you know, this could be this everything that's happened now with lockdowns and how people have been forced to, you know, work from home. This could be that just that little nudge that some countries needed to, you know, be more open to something like online retail. The problem was always that essentially then a lot of countries are skipping formal retail, going from informal to online, because a lot of countries don't have that mall culture yet, or the formal retail shopping experience culture. But, you know, maybe this was the nudge that a lot of countries needed, and that we could see online retail or just online business in general flourishing in coming years.
Yeah, that's really interesting, actually. And I remember us speaking a bit about that when we last spoke a few months ago around your research into consumer markets. So if people want to know more about that, they can read that on the Invest Africa website as well. Jack, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast today. Hopefully that will have helped to clarify some things for our listeners and a bit of order into some of the uncertainty.
If people want to keep up with your analysis, they can find you on Twitter at NKC Africa, on LinkedIn at NKC African Economics, and on your website, which is africaneconomics.com. I hope I've got all that right. We also have a special offer for Invest Africa listeners today who may be in need of NKC African Economics' support in navigating this challenging landscape. You can receive a discount of 20% on any subscription products purchased before the end of August, and you can find all the details for how you do this in the show notes. Jacques, thank you once again for your insights today.
Only a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Jack, and thank you everyone for listening. Next week, we'll be taking a deep dive into Africa's creative industries, so look out for that. And as always, don't forget to rate and subscribe.